Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Just be sitting up there jacking Pepsi.
I'm there for the pack out. You just got to pack me in.
Committed to the bow early on. Like, I love getting close and putting up.
You cover a range of stuff on here too, right? Like,
we call this the THP world headquarters.
You know, my grandpa Roy Weatherby.
I came into like that golden little pocket where there was like four or five different bowls. Just,
you're Canadian? We're doing a Canadian podcast.
My name's Douglas Fogg.
I'm Robbie Denning.
Roy Campbell.
Yeah, maybe it is.
It helps if you fucking plug it in. Just saying.
Yeah. Turn it on, plug it in.
Oh, there we go. Oh, I got to adjust the camera.
Holy fuck, man.
Now who likes the close-ups?
Yeah, now who's breaking in? Yeah.
There we go. We're back, boys. So I thought we were talking with Ashley, but I don't know who the fuck this young guy is on.
Well, I don't either. I was going to say.
Yeah, I got my brother. I didn't want to get up early, so I just sent my bro down.
So what's going on with the, what's going on? You just wanted like a fresh start?
What do you mean? This is how every year goes. It fresh starts. Yeah, absolutely.
So
cut the bad juju off.
You mean, so no, you fresh start, you shave, clean shave every year?
Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah. This is sort of off season Ashley here, but it's getting less and less of an off season.
So is that how we judge how much time you're out in the bush is like, do we get a measuring
tape? It doesn't take long. But yeah, that's by the end of it. Yeah, I've got this two-tiered thing going by the end of the hunting season. But that's true story. I kind of run it with the program.
Huh.
Kind of.
I'm trying to decide whether a beard looks better on you or I've seen you without a beard in like pictures, but never seen you.
Yeah, I get both camps. It's not sounding like it's going so good here this morning, but I get both camps. Some people are good on the beard and others are, including my wife, are not great on the beard. So
your wife doesn't like the beard. She prefers.
She doesn't love it. Yeah, she likes
she
it.
She likes when, to see her. She likes she to see likes her face.
It. Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, she likes it when I keep it toned down, but when I go full, when I go full maniac, she doesn't love it as much. I'd like to get the best at that point.
I thought you were just like beard all the time type of guy. Now that aged like Pete.
Many more dimensions than that. Yeah,
I can't stand the itchiness once it gets to a certain point. There, I can't get through it.
Yeah,
I just can't grow one. Like I don't grow facial hair on the sides of my face, and then like it's not really blotchy,
kind of a dog peed on lawn kind of a thing going.
Yeah, so I just leave it alone. But
I'm never gonna be able to unsee that now.
yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's well, one day, Kev. Sorry, you got me up to, like I said, this is my brother. He's, he'll razz you.
Hey man, it's good. So what are we gonna talk about? Kind of like the end of the year wrap up, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's the last day of the year.
I'm sweating like a hooker in church here. I just did a 5K run back on the treadmill.
That's disgusting.
Oh. Yeah.
That's like just no. Be a normal person and
Start tomorrow. Start the day after tomorrow. Yeah.
Drink your coffee, sit down and do nothing for 5 minutes.
Water, Dark Mountain, plug them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So year end wrap up. Bump, bump, bump. Good season.
Was a long season. Lots and lots of grinding.
Hard season. Yeah. Especially for both of you guys. You guys hammered it.
It's hard to forget, but
yeah, it's crazy. This year's already wrapping up. 2023. Fuck me, man. It's like it just flew by.
Already thinking about spring bear, which is crazy.
Man, I'm getting so excited for spring bear, man. Yeah. Hey, Ashley, I'm gonna tell you, like, we were gonna go on that whitetail hunt, and we were looking, like, every day I was checking the weather, like praying for cold weather. Oh, but holy fuck, am I loving this weather now?
No, I know. I still don't love it. It just bothers me. It's 10 degrees and Christmas is just, yeah, I don't enjoy it. But
well, you guys don't overly get too cold down there.
No, I mean, we
here
don't.
Here it's seasonally warm. I think it was like 11 degrees the other day.
That's something else.
Yeah.
And yet it's crazy. We've pretty much had the perfect weather, you know, -5 to -10 over by where we are.
That's heaven.
Which is warm for you guys.
Warmer. Yeah, we kind of, yeah, it's warmer. We've been sitting more in the lower single digits for longer than we normally do, but we kind of have a little pocket down here in the Kootenays where it's, I don't know, we don't get super cold weather. We kind of, that little oasis. I mean, we do get cold, but our little pocket here isn't so bad for whatever reason. But
yeah, no, it's been good. I'm getting lots done on my addition. Like,
looking good.
The demo would have been a bitch to, man, like I did 3 loads to the dump the other day, didn't get stuck. I didn't That's have nice. To, I didn't get busted for no high vis either. So that felt like a win. It was a big day for me.
Big day.
Man, they'll kick you out of there. You don't have a high vis on.
Are you serious?
I usually do have a high vis in the back of my truck somewhere, but I just didn't have one. But the guy was in a good Christmas mood, so he just let it slide.
Right.
To go to the dump, you need a high vis.
Yeah. So like I go into construction, I got a dump truck, so I'll go in the back where the commercial construction areas.
Okay, that's
fair. You need a high vis, but I've been like, they have high vis guys down there. I was going to say a different word, but I won't say it. They've got high vis guys down there, and they'll toss you if you're not wearing high vis. But I slipped in, slipped out 3 times, no high vis, so I was jacked, man.
That's good.
Yeah,
looking forward to seeing that thing all sealed up.
Yeah, it is. It's coming along.
Yeah, it's big. It's a lot bigger. Like once you start putting some walls up, and then you realize, like, I got the first 4 walls up, and now I still have to go to the peak, which is, you know, 25 feet from the ground. So, but yeah. Anyway, okay. Glad there's no snow.
Good that
what have you
way.
Been doing all week, Pete? Kids gone?
No, not till next week, or maybe Friday, Saturday. I think they go back. And I've just been working on my reno here. It's just been a freaking gong show.
Yeah, that color is definitely starting to grow on me. I don't know, it looks a little better.
Well, it's the lighting here. You flip it around to the other side of the room where it's not shadowy and I don't have a bunch of shit in here, it changes actually the look of it. We'll see though. I got the floor prep last night. We're finished prepping. I had to put some leveler down, and it's all dry so far, so turn the heaters back on, go fishing for a couple hours with Evie, and then I'm gonna start laying some floor later on before we head out to the lake for fireworks and some soda pops.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any New Year's resolutions?
I don't make New Year's resolutions. If I want to change, I just do it now. That's my philosophy. I don't need January 1st. I need now. You want to do it, do it.
Yeah. It always baffled me, or, you know, people are like, I'm going to quit drinking after New Year's, or I'm going to quit doing this, or I'm going to start exercising after once New Year starts. But it's like, nobody does it on the 1st. And like, if you're really saying you're going to start on the new year.
Well, I always do laugh when you kind of run through those memes and stuff too about the gyms. The gyms, you know, your regular gym person that goes 365 kind of deal rolls in January 1st or the first week of January. And it's like there's 500 people taking up every machine. And, you know, you wait 2 months, 3 months, and all of a sudden everybody whittles out, or the majority of the people, because that's what happens, is people can't. People choose not to keep pushing through, or maybe they've got their, you know, too high expectations at first, and, you know, they just slowly give up or they prioritize other things. And I think it's the toughest part. It's kind of like what you said to me last year, you know, just watching, you just gotta, hardest part is to start. And then after that, it's to keep that momentum going instead of choosing to sit down on your phone and, you know, be on the TikTok for half an hour. Well, you could have been downstairs riding a bike, lifting some small weights, doing what stairs. It doesn't matter. It's just a choice of what you're prioritizing.
You gotta make a habit. Make yeah. something habit. You gotta do it for, you know, a month. Put a good solid month in. But yeah, I imagine those gyms, man, their membership must increase dramatically. Well, I guess, you know, I don't know. I imagine they must have rebounded back now from COVID, but like, oh, January 1st must have been their, like, or January must have been like their top seller of months. But I don't know. I don't ever go to the gym, so I don't know. I know they all got shut down during COVID.
What do you do, Ashley? Home workouts? Do you go out somewhere?
No, I do home workouts. Last year I implemented something that really worked well for me, and that's in my home office here. I have my weight set up here, and in order to go get another coffee, go to the washroom, I have to do a set.
Nice.
So I just do a set, and then it's happening all through the day, and then it doesn't have to, because it's hard to find that hour to 2 hour focus time to just hit it hard. I save that mostly for like weighted training hikes and stuff when I got a bigger chunk of time, and I just hit the weights throughout the day, and that way I'm doing it more often. It ends up just being more weight training, and that's worked the best ever for anything I've implemented.
Yeah, you do a lot of rucking, eh? That's your
I do a lot of rucking for sure. I definitely did the most rucking ever last year. It felt like I was basically putting in hunt level hikes all through the year. I think there's some risk to that for some training injuries and stuff, but I didn't get hurt or anything last year, so it worked out good. I did the combination of rucking and then hand carry weight just to really sort of set the point home that you're going to want to put these weights down, but you can't. So just keep moving.
That's a big thing too. And it's not necessarily getting in shape. It's just trying to prevent injury while you're out there, or preventing injury so you can get back out there, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like flexibility, all that stuff, like not just training with weights and all that stuff. And like,
yeah, training, for sure.
Being flexible. So if you slip and fall, you're not going to pull a muscle. It'll just, you know, it's used to being flexible and not stiff.
You feel the difference when you're out there, right? When you're under load.
Oh, 100%.
If you've been working on it and keeping your mobility up, you're quite a bit different in your confidence of how your body's moving. You feel a lot more solid. You feel like you plant your feet where they go and keep moving. And if you kind of soften up and try and hit it as hard, because your brain still thinks you can, you quickly realize, oh, that training does matter. So,
oh, so yeah, that's the like, hardest as thing you get older, you got to train twice as hard to get half the results.
Now, have you ever trained this hard for your season this year in the past, or is this like the hardest that you've had to train? I mean, you're doing a lot right now with packing all your camera gear. Like, you're doing more than the average.
I think it's been progressively getting more over the last 3 years, particularly of being very specific. Like Kev just said, like, I am getting older, and I've really...
He's getting older too, so don't think...
Right, it's not just me. That's good. That's good to know. But I just really just said I wasn't going to go down without a fight. Like, I put in 50, 60 hours a week in front of a computer, or mostly in front of a computer.
Fuck, that's a lot.
Not counting the late night video editing and every other time I've got a computer in my face. So about 3 years ago, I realized I was kind of losing the fight, you know, like I didn't want to feel anything in my cardio system just by going up the stairs quick. If I wanted to punch up the stairs to go in and grab something I forgot in the washroom, I didn't want to feel that at all. And I could, and I was like, no, this, that won't do. That was sort of I was like, nope, let's just work on this. And it wasn't New Year's. It was just the middle of the year. And I was just like, no, we're going to work on this a little bit. So yeah, it's still a project, but much better.
It does a lot. Yeah. I mean, being a guy that is like, my job puts me outside pretty much for 90% of it. So, I mean, I'm not a fan of being in front of the computer too much. It just, I don't know, it takes a lot. And then you're doing editing on top of that, man. You got full weeks, big weeks.
Yeah.
It's amazing you squeezed in that much time. I mean, I've done it too, where I've squeezed in like these years where you're like putting in like massive days, massive amounts of hours throughout the year into a hunting season. But, you know, I feel like I had a lot less obligations then. My kids were really young, or not even born. But like, you got all this stuff going on and you're still squeezing all this in.
Yeah, and I don't think I would be happy if I wasn't, you know. And I got a lot of support for sure. My wife's...
Oh, great. Your wife's got to be solid. Yeah, you need a rock star wife to be able to...
Yeah, you can't do this if you've got shaky foundations, that's for sure. So that's, I haven't been editing much through this fall because I'm working, planning hunts, I'm hunting, you know, and, but I've hit the editing pretty hard here over Christmas, and that's kind of, let me back up. I was pretty burnt out, honestly, by the end of her there. And,
I mean,
that's been good.
I bet you have, like...
It's a hell of a...
I mean, I don't know if you want to share the story. It's up to you. But yeah, man, it's a rough ending.
Rough ending, and frankly, never worked so hard for as little a result as I pulled out of the season. That's just the brass tacks of it. But yeah, the wiping the truck out at the end of the year, just to sort of put that last dagger in me was a little bit tough to take. I thought the truck was going to end up wintering up in the hill, actually, but
which is a shitty feeling. And now I'll just tell you the story, and my brother's probably going to hate it, but I think he listens to the show anyway. But so we were younger, we lived up north at the time, and him and his buddies there, they, you know, I think it's like early in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, they want to go for a joyride. So I had a Jeep Cherokee. So he had a pickup, two cab, like single cab Nissan pickup, and all his buddies wouldn't fit in there. So they decided to hop into mine and take it up the mountain. Well, they got almost to the top and it got stuck. So he shows up at 6 o'clock. I'm like, hey man, where's my truck? You know, he's like, oh, like, I can't remember if it ended in fists or not. Like, I don't remember. I'm sure it was close if it didn't. But anyway, so it stuck up there. They tried all day to get it out. They had another truck. That truck got stuck. They got that truck out. They all got back down. Then it snows. And this is up in... So there used to be a ski hill up where they were. And like this truck, there's pictures of it where it's just like the window and top of it showing in the snow. And you got guys with their snowboards taking jumps off the hood and all that shit. Like, yeah. So, yeah. And then that truck was up there till the spring. So I drove his truck. He wasn't too happy about it. He's like, well, what the fuck? I'm like, well, what the fuck what?
Yeah.
Leave my shit alone. But we were going to go on that hunt. I think we were going to leave Thursday. We're going to go chase some whitetails.
We're going Thursday. I was coming Thursday.
And then I was like, okay, well, good luck. I think I talked to you on Thursday. You were leaving. And like, I'm like, oh, this is going to be your weekend. I know it's going to go good for you. It's going to go down. Yeah. I didn't hear from you all Sunday. And I was like, what the fuck? Then I'm kind of like, well, I'm not like worried that, you know, you're stuck high and dry because you're not that kind of person. But I was like, what the fuck? I mean, like he must have got one and then like
nasty pull pack out or something like that. Something that's like that. What
he's
I was tired, picturing.
Or he's driving and he's just missing my text. And then next morning at like 5:30 in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning, I get this text. In Kamloops at a hotel, truck got stuck. I'll call you later. And I was like, what the fuck? It's no good.
It was an epic pack out, Pete. Because I ended up packing out all my camera gear, all the most valuable stuff, just because I, you know, in the dark with the snow ripping down, I thought, you know, she's probably here. You're probably here. So I just loaded up and, I didn't bother converting it to kilometers, but it was 43,000 steps that day. So
holy shit.
And I got in that hotel at 12:30 at night, actually, in Kamloops, full camo, of course. I'm like, I'm not bringing a change of city clothes. I went in and
did you guys get like, did you walk all the way to a hotel or did you like get to
place? No, we got a ride. So Sterling's dad, the cameraman's dad, came and met us there basically right on the highway.
So I'm just going to fill in the blanks here. So you guys are out hunting, you're leaving late, and it's turning to just like just bad weather. It's coming down like 10 men.
Yep.
Just nasty. And your truck goes off the road. Now, is this like a forestry service road, totally accessible road, or is it like an old, you know, just like unmaintained, like
it's like a
deactivated road type of thing?
Like a two track through the grasslands that's been used for years, but
and you guys had two trucks up there, yours and your cameraman's. Yours goes off the truck hard.
Yes.
Not off the truck. The truck goes off the side of the hill hard, stopped by a tree. And then your cameraman, he gets stuck as well.
He did. Yeah. He went first because he didn't have chains and I didn't want to slicken it up for him anymore. I wanted him to have as much of that traction, that few inches of snow, to act as traction as possible. So then I creeped out to the edge. We had just basically bullied the camp into the truck in the, you know, ripping snow. I'm like, boy, feeling pretty caught here, that shouldn't have pushed it. And then I get out to the edge of the hill and I see him down at the bottom. He's a young guy. And I'm like, oh, good. Look at him. He's made it fine. He's just looking back to check on me to make sure I make it down the hill fine. Rolled forward another 20 feet. And he wasn't even on the road. He was 30 feet off the road already. Ooh. He just happened to be stopped there, idling, headlights on, in a random part of this old burn. So I then took my ride through it, which was, I bet you I slid, I don't want to exaggerate, because I did at Christmas, I was like, yeah, 300 meters, but I think it was a good 150 to 200 meters of sideways travel down this hill. So a long ways. That's a long trip.
Sitting in the passenger seat and like for that long, and it's not like you're probably not going fast, so it's happening like slowly, but you're just like helpless where you're like, fuck, like what am I, like you just like totally helpless, can't do anything.
It is, you know,
gut-wrenching feeling.
It's got to end with a crunch for sure. And to be honest, I think at the peak speed I was probably doing 30 or 40 kilometers an hour sideways, like four wheels completely sideways, and then I'd see a fir tree about, you know, that big around, whiz past the headlights. And then, there's others out there and snow's ripping down. And then, I see one in my peripheral, just as the headlights are barely lighting it up, you know, a fir tree about that big around, and smacks the front fender, which then turned me backwards. I almost stopped on it, and then it just sort of slid off.
Oh man.
And I was thinking, time to jump out. But by the time I was finished processing the thought, I sort of slid ass back down the hill and was going, I was like, I better not jump out. I'll probably end up under my front tire here. So I hang on again for another ride, and then basically, back up to 30, 40 kilometers an hour, and then whacked into a stump into the running board, and then crashed into the blowdown with the whole passenger side, and then that was it. Then I was like, oh, good, okay. Now the rest is figure this problem out, but I've lived here. I was just thinking, like, no cliff, no bluff, because there's lots of little bluffs in there, and one of those could have ruined my day pretty bad. So
yeah, because then you start rolling, and then that's when you're going to sustain some serious injuries when your truck starts flipping ass over tea kettle.
Oh yeah, I felt her want to hop a few. There's a few dig-ins on the sidewalls of those low passenger side tires where I was like, oh boy, don't hook into anything sharper than that, because I could feel the truck, you know, I probably had 1500 to 2000 pounds of gear on the truck, right? And I was like, geez, do not start rolling, but didn't.
It's fine. It's a nice feeling when the rubber side stays down.
Yeah,
regardless of shitty situation or not, when that rubber stays down, then you know things can always get worse, but they're not there yet.
They're not there yet. Yeah.
And it's one of those things I think you have to look at where you're like, yeah, that sucked, but it could have been a lot fucking worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was happy to be hung up. I wasn't sort of like, no one likes smacking up their vehicles or anything, but I was genuinely more happy just to come to a halt into a blowdown than.
Yeah. I mean, you're able to walk out of there. That's the main thing. You don't have to hit that SOS to get medevaced out there or something.
And the last thing I'll say about the story, because I thought it was sort of a little bit of insult to injury and kind of entertaining to my sick mind, is you know, we're hiking out and you know, we're halfway, we got 12k or so to get out, and we're about halfway, and the headlamps just see a few eyes. I thought, oh, must be a group of deer through here. It's, you know, this is heavy into the winter range. And then Sterling goes, no, I seen a fluffy tail. I was like, oh, wolves. So we've got guns and stuff, but the Sterling goes for the I'm lost whistles. You know, those like, high pitched whistles.
Yeah. Like what referees have.
Oh yeah, it's similar, only his is one of those tubular brass ones. Anyway, but idea, that makes the high pitch, hey, I'm lost, I was hiking, and please come find me. He hits that thing, and before I could even react, he hits it again, and at least three of those wolves, the pack was probably 20 to 30 wolves, so good size pack.
Holy shit.
At least three broke off right away, and I just reached my hand over and sort of hit him in the chest. Said, stop blowing that. They think that's a fawn. These guys are in here punishing deer right now. You sound like a baby fawn.
Yeah.
They're confused. But three of them broke off, came within 15 yards. I was basically roaring as I'm getting ready to defend the castle there, and that turned them around right away and snapped them out of it. But they actually thought, as soon as he blew that, they just triggered.
Yeah.
And they're coming in. Then they're...
I'm just going to throw this out there as a positive for that story right there. You may have just got yourself a new predator call too.
Yeah, a predator and a good spot.
Tried, true, and tested.
And a good spot, yeah. No, that's legitimately what happened there. They were 70 80 yards away, sort of moving away, you know, they could see our headlamps, and probably, but as soon as he hit that, boy, three of them broke right away. You could see them just coming straight at us 15 yards away. So
that's I wonder close. How long they were tailing you before you caught sight of them.
It seemed like we crossed them, so it wasn't like they were on us, but I think they were circling the wagon, sort of, because we sort of walked into them. They were kind of circling to see what we were, and then they probably seen the two headlamps bobbing away there, and it didn't look right to them.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. Instinct took over as soon as he popped that little high-pitched call. Oh boy,
what was he thinking? Was he getting nervous when he seen the wolves? Was he thinking?
Well, yeah, he thought that they wouldn't like that. Like, it's like almost a dog whistle, or like almost like a, like they wouldn't like this. But as soon as he blew it, I knew right away that just sound. I didn't expect them to charge in like they did. Honestly, I just knew it sounded like a fawn, like a really panicked fawn. So I was like, going to hit him, he was already through his second blow on the thing, and I'm like, don't. And then he's like, okay, yeah. And then, you know, they exit stage left, and then
if you're gonna do that, get that damn camera rolling now. We got some footage coming in.
I'm
gonna film these things chewing on your leg.
I really wish I would have been able to capture that in some way, but that was by that time the filmer in me has gone to bed and been sulking for a while there. I was
head down moment. Well, man, and then you ended up, you took the bus home, which is amazing. I didn't even know there was still
buses. Yeah, I didn't even know there was a bus either.
So you took the bus home, regrouped, headed back up there. Some winches, come-alongs, pulleys, some elbow grease, and you got her out. And some warmer weather.
Yeah, I didn't realize how expensive gas-powered winches are, but now I'm the proud owner of a really nice one, so... But yeah, that's
I thought you were gonna say, I thought you were gonna say, so if anyone wants to buy a gas winch, just DM
right. Yeah, that's so if anyone wants an okay deal on a pretty much brand new Honda gas powered winch,
used once,
used hard once,
confirmed it works really well.
Yeah, it works. It actually was a pain in the ass, really. But that won't help sell it. But yeah, we used every tool in the toolbox. We even salted the two track there. I think I had 380 pounds of salt, quad chained up all around, and then just basically spent, I don't know, probably took us seven working hours where we were just working on the truck 8 hours to get them out.
Wow. And you got it out. You sent me the picture. Like when you told me you got it out, I wasn't expecting that much damage when you sent me those pictures.
Yeah, it's you were expecting less damage?
I was expecting less damage.
I think I was expecting more, like
yeah, you were there though, and you knew the severity of it.
Yeah, you know, sure. It's definitely crunched up. The front lens is gone. The front bumper's mucked up. So yeah, it got a good smear. So
if anybody wants a good deal on
a Tundra, yeah,
comes with a winch.
Yes, it comes with a winch, and it's proven as well. It's proven. Yeah.
They're a tandem now. They got to stay together. So
yeah,
if you buy the truck. You're gonna want the winch.
Yeah, maybe that'll.
No, that's funny. Well, it's good you guys got her out. Sterling got his truck out too, and
it's more concerning.
And then just regroup. It's for sure, because when you drag, like, not that you drug him into it, but you know, when you're like, you feel like you're responsible for that person and that person's equipment. It definitely weighs on you too. You definitely want to make sure that their stuff and that them are okay. You know, you kind of put them ahead of yourself.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a young guy. I mean, that part of our arrangement is, you know, he learns about hunting and he helps me film. So I've taught him what not to do in the late season. I did say, hey, let's leave your pickup down low here in my defense. But still, the forecast was good. Conditions were dry. And he's like, nah, let's take up. And I was like, yeah, what? I'm sure it's fine. If we get any threat of snow, we'll be off. So, you know, we'll pull the trucks down. Well, that didn't quite work. We got Hunter Brain and then took it right into the
snow. I always feel like it's best to leave one vehicle, like, and to take the least amount of vehicles possible. But I've also been in situations where you get stuck and it's like, the less vehicles that are stuck, the better.
Yeah, I mean, if there's no threat of like bad terrain and you know, whether it's bad rainstorms out in the silty, you know, Chilcotin area there where you just slip off the road in the middle of summer. If there's no real threat, then two is good, because then someone's battery dies, you got a jumper that's close. You don't have to hike for your jumper, but in situation like this, it's a no-brainer that that we should have just been smarter and parked the one vehicle down low. And the thing is, it's kind of sacrilegious bringing your camp high. Bring your camp high in late season is not what we usually do. It would have been so dry, and I had such an intense hunt plan. that I just wanted every advantage of not having to do the 45 minute hike every morning when I already wanted to be at the Glassing Knob, walking in the dark at the Glassing Knob. And you know, it was more strategic than lazy, because I couldn't have worked harder at whatever I've done this year. But it's
Mule deer,
in my opinion,
the mule deer definitely kicked your butt this year.
It's the love of my life, and it kicked my ass, man.
Yeah,
it's
and I feel like mule deer do that, though. Like, I've had my ass handed to you. I've had it served to me on a plate, chasing fucking mule deer. Like,
I could have shot a couple other 4 points earlier on, and it was tough pickings. I wasn't seeing a lot of deer, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't get on the trigger for
well,
it.
Well, and that's the thing, is when you're trying to capture on a film, and also too, when you set the sort of expectation in your mind of what class of mule deer you want to get. And the thing about mule deer, and just like, I'm not going to say elk, because I feel like elk are a little different, especially hunting elk in BC, where like you can be a little bit more, if you're going to target, you want to target a mature buck. I mean, eventually you will get one. You just have to grind it out, and you know, you might get burned that season, but you have to be willing to eat your tag in order to punch, you know, to get a great buck, because you're never going to get a great buck if you're always just settling for the good ones. Elk, it's a little different, because it's like, if you want to consistently punch that tag, we have a 6-point rule here. And like, I've seen a lot of big fives that I would love to take, massive fives. I would take those over most 6 points, but we just have a 6-point antler restriction here. So, but you don't get the opportunity. Like, if you pass on a 6-point bull, that might be the only 6-point bull around in that area. It might be around the herd, right? So you just never know. Where mule deer are a little different. So, but yeah, like if you're looking for, you know, always to be increasingly, you know, if you get a 160 buck and the next year, like, okay, I'm not going to settle for anything less than a 160. You're never going to get to 170, 180 if you just shoot a 150 buck.
Yeah. 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 That's what my buddy Jesse had that going through my head now for the last few years, as I've slowly sort of changed perspective to just have some personal goals. It's not break any records or anything, but it's just sort of what it takes to step it up and to look for more mature animals, you know.
Do you feel when you're filming these, like you're filming, trying to capture this film, that it's puts more pressure on you to shoot a bigger buck or a bigger elk or a bigger bear, a bigger class animal?
I think it had been, and I think I went through this season and I'm changing the perspective a little bit. I think I'm looking for mature animals that it may, like, it's a 150, I'm going to shoot it, even though that wouldn't be my personal best, if I have good lighting, cameras rolling, it is more important to me to tell the story about mule deer hunting. And in order to tell it as loudly as you can, you need a harvest. And the harvest doesn't have to be that 195 to tell a good story. And I realize if I hold out for 195s, I'm going to tell the story once in my life if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
And I want to tell the story and sort of keep a running story going on mule deer in BC every year.
Yeah, mule deer, something else.
That's hard. Yeah,
for me, it's, you know, I'd love to get like a big 3-point in velvet or a mature buck, but I've never shot, like, I've shot 3 points, but never a really big three. And they don't look as good to me. Like, they're not as appealing or as attractive to me, like these big threes, unless they're in velvet for some reason.
Right.
And I've never been able to get one in velvet, a mule deer in velvet. So.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's tough because they're never, it's when they, if you're targeting a buck, he might, you know, he might have velvet up to 2 days or a day before the opening of archery, right? For archery mule deer, which is September 1st. And so, like, if you've been watching this buck, and I've done it before, we're watching this buck and like, you're getting excited, like, oh, 2 days. And all of a sudden you see him the one day before opening, it's like all his velvet's gone. You're like, what the fuck, man? You couldn't hold off for like a couple more days.
He just knew you were coming. He's like, I got to get this shit off me. I don't even want it off.
Get this off now.
Yeah, LaToy, we've heard about him.
Yeah.
I'm a dead man if you let him out here with this stuff on.
I heard him. Yeah.
But then I've seen some, you know, you get some deer that just, they keep their hair on until, you know, like the fifth, sixth or longer, depending on, you know, the weather. I don't really know if weather has much to do with it. I'd have to look into that. I don't know. Cause some years, you know, and it seems like the bigger bucks, they rake that shit off. Probably starts bugging them earlier. They want to get to hard horn.
I've noticed that too, really tough. The bull elk too, that I always have in one of my areas that I'm in, that I have a few cameras set up, is if there's any bigger ones there, they're always hard horned before the 4 points, the 3 points,
right,
the twos, yeah, always.
Yeah. And like elk are early. Like I have, it's not very often you see them, you know, once you're getting close to the opening,
yeah,
that they're not hard horned. So, but yeah, anyway, mule deer is, I feel like mule deer, they're just, you know, it's a lifelong journey with mule deer. It's, you know, I put a lot of time into mule deer, just chasing strictly mule deer, and you kind of got to sacrifice hunting everything else. But lately, you know, the last couple of years, I've just been, you know, on the elk bandwagon. So, but, you know, mule deer are definitely still my favorite.
Yeah, I got bit pretty hard by the elk bug this year. That was the most sort of focused elk hunt I'd ever done. And we've been, you know, moose hunters and deer hunters forever. But this year, you know, calling in multiple bulls, just not able to get it done. Some of it my own fault, some of it circumstantial. I got bit. Getting pounded in the chest with those bugles back is pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Once you first start getting into elk and interacting with elk, and you start communicating back and forth, and you're getting, you know, you get the vocalization from the bulls bugling at you, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you got planned for the new year here, hunt wise? What's first on the list for you this year?
Pete, why don't you hang that mule deer or that whitetail you got, just the tip poking up? Why don't you hang that behind you on that wall? Are you not allowed to hang anything on the wall yet?
Oh no, all this stuff, it's still not bleached. Fuck, dude, it's been sitting here. See, my bear skull's right beside it too. What's going up on my wall over where I'm putting all this stuff?
It would look good right there. Hey, Ashley, right behind him there.
This isn't where I'm going to be though. I'm going to be over there.
Yeah, go to where the mounts go.
Yeah,
this is temporary.
This is all just where it has been. I've got like half my basement is all jammed into this half of the. Yeah, I had to move a bunch of shit just to be able to put my computer down and sit in front here. It's a disaster down here right now. No, I've got two more skull huckers on order to hang a couple things, and my whitetail from the other years up in the kids' room. So that's coming down. And
You should hang your wife's moose.
No, it's fine where it is. Stay the fuck out of my. Hey, look at that thing every goddamn day. I can see the nose of it from down here, actually looking up.
Just so we could be like, oh yeah, yeah. All the new guests. I would mention, like, you see Pete's wife's moose that she killed right behind.
Yeah,
him? Yeah,
hit, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's all right.
Next time you get the draw.
Yeah, yeah, who knows, maybe I'll get lucky again.
I wonder what it's going to be like for LEHs this year. I hear it's going to be some serious, like some significant changes in, like, I would be really shocked if the regs for BC get changed with any substantial, like, aha, like a big shift where it's like mule deer is going to archery only September, no rifle hunting in for mule deer in September, or like no, get rid of that any buck season or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like it might get shrunk a little bit, shortened down, but I don't know. Yeah, I just feel like in BC, they have a hard time committing to make the hard moves.
It's tough. Do you guys still have any buck in any of the other regions? Because I know we got out of it.
Region 8 has any buck. 8-1 to 8-11 for all October.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of any buck season.
And early season archery is any buck as well in region 8, and then up as you get into region 3 they have an any buck season And your region, well, what do you have in your region for?
Well, we have, it's 4 point for most of the season. It is any buck in archery season, the first 9 days, but
I don't feel like that. I don't know if that any, that 4 point restriction though, it's doing like, there's a lot of 3 points I get shot, especially with mule deer, because when you're looking at a mule deer and it's a three, a lot of those things, if they're looking right at you, they look really big.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you get some guys who are, you know, a little less experienced, they shoot first and count later. I mean, it happens. It's unfortunate. It does happen, though.
Well, big, tall threes. They do look impressive. And, you know, them put him walking away on the skyline. And he's a 4 point all day long to a lot of people that are desperate to pull the trigger. But you
And in people's defense, profile, too. Right? Yeah. And in defense, too, of like, I'm not just saying, you know, picking on anyone or like no. It's tough, like, don't get me wrong, like, especially if you get in some of these treed areas, you know, they're moving their head around and branches and stuff, it's hard. I mean, then those animals do, like mule deer, that's what make mule deer so alluring, is like they just have these great beautiful racks.
Yeah, we used to have any buck season here just before, like, I can't remember when I started hunting, if I was 34 35 or something like that, but it was like just the year or two before that is when they took it out and went back to 4 point. And I mean, there's lots of reasons, tons of reasons why the populations plummeted around here. But, you know, when everybody has a chance at a buck, it does take some out of the system, so to speak. You know what I mean? Because we had so many around here. But there was lots of other stuff. There's lots, a couple hard winters in a row too, that really hurt the recruitment of fawns and stuff like that. I think it was just an unfortunate bad recipe there just before they went back to 4 point, to just some of the winters, predators, any buck. It was, yeah, just unfortunate, yeah, is what it was.
It'd be cool to, like, I started collecting a couple cycles ago, I started collecting the regs. I wish I would have had them back all the way so you could kind of look over time historically how the regs have changed. I've tried to find that information online, but I haven't. I feel like 2 years is too long. I feel like it's a lazy way for them to manage our wild, like to manage what we're allowed for harvest. Where you, like, you know, in the States, and like I realize the States have a lot more money, but even in other provinces, it's a lot different. It's like year to year.
Yeah.
I feel like we need more of that, where it's not just be, like,
but they would have to dump so much money into it to kind of.
But they don't dump any money into it. That's the whole point, is like there's more money coming in than there is going out.
Yeah.
Where it should be the opposite. I mean, this is a resource that's irreplaceable. Wildlife is a resource that's completely irreplaceable. Once it's gone, we can't get it back.
Yeah. No,
I mean, like, you could do transfers and all that stuff, but you know what I'm saying? Like, once it's gone, it's not going to be the same.
Well, coming from, you know, some of the areas that I am with, like the Rod and Gun Club and different organizations, the government always, in quotations, puts out information. We're like, we'd love to hear your club or your organization's feedback on these regulations. These things are potentially being proposed or whatnot, or what do you think needs to be proposed for future, right, for the next set of regulations? And they give you like a month, month and a half. And it's like, how can you possibly expect a good return for these clubs and organizations to get the information out to all their members or, you know, people, and then get all that good info back from everybody, and then have time to present it back to you. Like, it's a joke.
Yeah. Well, they need to work. They need to have clubs and organizations working with biologists and stuff too, because I mean, like, let's be honest, as hunters, we're kind of biased.
Yeah.
Right. Like, is everybody really willing, if it came down to it, to say, you know, we need to just stop hunting mule deer altogether because too many of them get killed on the roads?
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting too to talk to biologists who wouldn't get in trouble, for one, from their bosses or whatever, whether the government actually listens to them. They know their shit, right? They've gone to school for this. They do their studying. But you can come up with all the answers you want, hand it to your boss. And if your boss is...
Well, I think there's just too many... Angle. There's too many people involved in one specific...
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there for sure.
Yeah, well, there's like, they shouldn't be all kind of molted together into one organization like Flynn Row. It should be where it's just wildlife, and that's it. Where it's just wildlife only. It has nothing to do with land, forestry, any of that stuff. It's just wildlife, specifically wildlife. What's best for the wildlife? All, you know, not what's best for logging, what's best for logging industry, what's best for forestry, right?
And I think having people in those positions, irregardless which departments they're in, that actually have a background in it. I'm sorry, but just having Joe Blow getting into there because they're filling somebody else doesn't help.
I mean, look at the what's her, Katrina Conroy. She was the director of FLNRO, and now she's doing something else. She's finance minister or something like that, and completely like that. She shouldn't be in that position where she's managing our wildlife when she's just an elected official.
Yeah,
like there should be an actual position for somebody who has invested interest, invested their time, invested, you know, put their blood, sweat, and tears into wildlife and learning about wildlife and the impact of like what forestry does on wildlife, on the landscape and all that stuff, right? Not just somebody who's elected to be in that position and then, you know, in 4 years they might be doing something else.
You need somebody who wants to fight for it.
And it has to be science-based. Like I completely believe in science-based approach, and I think we have on the Vale what we call a science-based approach, but we have a political approach that that's overpowering the science basis behind the decisions we make. And I think whether it means losing certain opportunities or not, I'm fine with that. I think if we manage it closer now, it's not no mule deer hunting at all. But I think if we continue to manage mule deer specifically the way we are right now, it potentially becomes that. I just think, you know, I don't know how yet, but I'm getting tired of waiting for other people to do it. So
yeah, it's frustrating when you're working on this level when you see what's happening and what's not happening and like the length of time, because like in the amount of time that when I started this podcast to now, it's like it's been talked about a lot, but nothing's been done.
Yeah.
Lots, like we've covered lots of issue, and there's guys, you know, look at what stuff Mark Hall does and all this stuff, and it's like it seems like it's just not getting done. So I mean, and there's other groups and organizations that are involved, but it just seems like still nothing's getting done. So I don't know if it's just filling, you know, I don't know what it is, but something definitely needs to change. You're right, we definitely need a drastic change. And I think the only way to get people really involved and to really spark any significant change that's going to help the wildlife, it's going to be something that nobody wants or nobody would like to see we just don't want it. But what did you guys think of that Sydney Island deer call? What were your thoughts on that?
I think there's much better ways to have there's just better approaches, contracting it out to a firm from another country. I think it just could be organized better with partnerships with the groups of people that have vested interest in BC resident hunters, not just a contract for the government to go and semi-selectively harvest.
It's a lot of money they're dumping into that thing anyway.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a lot of money. And I think there's
they did the same thing in 2017, 2018. Somebody sent me an article about a similar call that happened in 2017 and 2018, I want to say, on Haida Gwaii with the deer there.
Right.
But yeah, it's a lot of money they're dumping into. And yeah, I mean, there definitely probably is other ways that they could approach it. I mean, you know, like Mark Hall, he said that it's not fair chase. It's not about fair chase. Yeah, we get that. But I just feel like it is a resource that is like this. It's a resource owned by the province and the taxpayers of the province, not necessarily, right? Like, to me, all animals should be accessible to all BC resident hunters. If that species, that herd, can sustain hunting, like obviously if there's something, you know, like that that's you know, vulnerable, we don't want to be hunting them, right? Whether it's sheep, caribou, you know, moose, whatever it is, mule deer, you know, obviously there has to be an adequate amount of animals for us to be able to harvest, but I feel like if it's there, it should be available for resident hunters to access. And like, they could have sold, they could have made money. They could have sold tags for it. Don't give it out for free. Sell tags for it.
That's what I mean.
And put that money back into wildlife management somewhere. Don't just throw it into a pot, spend it however you want, and bonuses. Yeah.
You know, even if they would have done the exact same thing, which I'm not saying I'm for that, but hire a Canadian company.
Yeah.
There's food for thought. Why would you outsource something like that?
So what was the deal with the weapons that were used? Were they using weapons that were part of the ban that Trudeau did?
Sounded like AR-15s with extended clips.
So that's probably why they couldn't hire Canadians, because Canadians aren't allowed. It's fine if somebody else uses them, just not Canadians.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they missed that in their paperwork. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, moving on, getting away from 2023. I don't know. A lot of stories, a lot of highlights. It's a good year, fun year. I mean, I didn't get a bear, unfortunately.
Oh,
a couple months.
Kind of bummed out with that. But yeah, I mean, with this weather that we're getting, Christ, we might, who knows, they might be up running around April 1st.
Yeah. Yeah. There could be a very untypical start there of that very slow start. They might be out munching. Yeah. The snow line's still not where it's ever been in, you know, the 30 years I've been here.
No, and like, even driving up to the local ski here, we're doing some work up there, and like, you get up almost to the summit, you're like, man, there's very little snow here. We're under the trees. You know, there is snow on the ground, but it's not very thick. Like, there's patches that hit that where it gets the sunny areas that it's melting throughout the day, which is crazy. Like, normally you go up there and there's 5-6 feet of snow.
So you got, Kevin, I know you're for turkey, bear in spring. Ashley, you thinking about turkey, bear for sure.
Turkey, bear, but before that, I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is. I'm gonna go chase some predators pretty hard here for January and February. So I've been talking to a couple different guys from a few different corners of the province, actually. So I'm gonna lay some rubber down on the road and go make an impact where
are you waiting for your truck to get fixed, or are you just buying a new one, selling that one with the winch?
I'm getting rid of the Tundra. I've got it drivable. The mechanical stuff, she's straightened up from the front end, and that the cosmetics, we'll get that dealt with in the new year here. But to me, I'm on such a rat race, it feels like, that I just have to keep ripping and tearing, right? It's not going to hurt me to have a front passenger fender punched out. I'm probably going to change the lens out on the passenger light just so that doesn't blow out on me. But and then it'll probably take me a while to just get it booked in to get it fixed. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Well, that should be an exciting winter then. I'm going to assume some cats.
Yeah, I'm trying to. That was a conversation I was in yesterday. I've been out with a friend a couple years ago. Cat hunting's like it's I enjoy the you know, once we release the hounds, lots of fun. You know, it's hard. You're sweating your ass off. You're in waist deep snow.
It's a lot harder than people think. People don't give that enough credit. When you're even like just the amount of work houndsmen put in. I had a friend, he was getting into it. He bought a couple dogs and like never done it before. So he went into it just like fresh, green as you can get. And
right.
Knew nothing about dogs. Didn't even own a dog. So he buys these two dogs. He bought a blue nose or a red nose and a blue tick. Red bone and blue tick. Yeah. So he bought one of each. So got the GPS collars and stuff. He's like, hey, you want to go out chase some cats? You can shoot one. I'm just training my dogs. And so we go, first day we lose the dogs. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? These dogs aren't coming back and it's dark. I'm like, we had to leave him. And I remember like laying there in bed. I was like, fuck, I felt so like,
yeah.
I'm like, fuck, we had to leave these fucking dogs. I'm like, wonder what they're doing. And like, we went out the next morning early. We found them right away. They were just bedded down and didn't move. So he'd actually lost the GPS collar because GPS has went dead. And we just went to the last signal. They were just, sure enough, they're just sitting there.
Yeah, that's yeah.
But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of physical work. It's like, it's crazy.
Oh, these you know, the houndsmen are
not an easy hunt.
Super dedicated, not easy at all. Yeah, people have this picture in their head where it's just sort of like, ah, oh, let the dogs out of the truck and there's a cat in a tree and you walk, you stroll in there. No.
Well, that's because I feel like back into where you, like into your position where they're filming these and like making accessible for people to see, that's what they're showing.
Yeah.
And like, if you look at all those hunts, that's exactly what they're showing. So for somebody watching it, obviously they're going to get that. They're not sitting there and showing the four hours of like sitting there sweating, dreading, climbing up, down rocks, over fall down. That's in sport snow, getting down through cliffs, up through it. It's like, I mean, it's hard to capture that, I guess, because you can't just show 4 hours of 4 hours of that. Because after 15 minutes, I'm just gonna be like, well, fuck this, I ain't watching this.
Well, I got lots of hiking videos, I know, but that, it is pretty good conditions for some cool. You know, that is a good part. The part that really blew me away, where I was in the club of not really understanding all the moving parts to get this to happen, is the amount of ground you have to cover before the dogs get cut loose. And as a hunter riding through premium winter range, like it is hard for me not to want a glass and not to do anything except drive and cut tracks. Let's cut tracks, got to cut tracks. Got fresh snow that morning. It is all about, you know, putting in the kilometers to cut the track.
Yeah. And
which got pretty mind numbing, pretty difficult to me, for me personally. But as soon as you cut the track, it's once you're getting tree alarms on their GPS collars, then I'm just super happy, even though it is really shitty, the 3 kilometers through waist deep snow that you got to go down into the canyon, overblow down under, you know, through the cliffs. These dogs are crazy where they go after these cats. So
yeah, it's amazing those new GPSs they have. Imagine doing it before they had all this equipment. Like they did it, but before they had all these GPS collars, and like they can tell if dogs are treed. But sometimes if a dog's running up, it'll sound off like it's climbing a tree, and we've had that happen too. But the what gets me is, like, yes, if it's fresh snow, finding a fresh track is like a lot easier. Still not like a given.
No,
because they have to catch up with a cat.
Yeah,
first of all, and like that cat could be long gone, or it could be in an area where it's just like those cats can get into areas where those dogs can't. So and sure enough, they'll be able to follow the track, but if the track is in goes into a place where they can't go, like up cliffs and up these really steep rock faces, those dogs can't go there, and they're not going to be able to just, you know, circle around and find it again. They're just going to keep digging at that claw, that track mark. But what got me is like understanding how fresh tracks are. Like we were driving on sleds and being like, oh, there's a track. Oh no, to me it looked like it was good. Nope, it's no good. Right. We don't want to track that one. Keep going. Oh, how about this one? No, still not good. And it's like, just like all that knowledge you have of like what tracks are good, what tracks are not good, size of the cat,
the gate. They know just by looking at the gate and the size of the pads, you know, they're even saying, oh, that's probably an older female, you know.
Exactly.
To have that length of gate with that size of paw or that size of pad.
Yeah.
You know,
even though they can tell, you know, the size of it just by the tail marks in the ground and stuff, like in the snow and stuff like that. So it's pretty impressive. And even like we're in the region I'm in, there's a lot of cats. So it's easier to find bobcats. Not so much lynx. Like I did see a lynx last year moose hunting. I took a shot and it missed. But bobcats are super easy. Like bobcats, there's so many bobcats in this one area where I hunt. You can actually see them. Like you're cruising along and you'll be, if you know, you find tracks, you find some rabbits, some cliffed out areas. Man, you'll find, you can actually sit there for long enough and you'll see one.
Right.
They're just up in the trees. So if you're seeing those things, there's got to be a lot of them. Yeah. But the same with cougars. There is a real high population of cougars, but there's very little predator hunting in an area. Like besides myself, I don't know of anyone who's doing it. There's no trappers around, which, you know, trappers put a huge dent in the predator population.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've come across cats and I've tracked cats through the snow, actually last year I found those two on that calf story, and I've already told the story. But you know, when you're actually seeing cats, there's got to be a lot of them, because normally you don't see those things. If you're in an area where there's not a real high dense population of cats, you don't see them.
Yeah,
but yeah, like those, you know, the houndsmen, the dogs, it's definitely not an easy hunt by no means. It's physically demanding, a lot more physically challenging than people think.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Pete? Tell us a story. Wrap up 2023 with a bang.
Fuck. Wife's still making fun of me for not getting my moose.
Well, I mean, you had a good year. You got a bear.
Yeah, yeah. No, it started off good. Got my bear. Skull's just about bleached.
You got second at the Canadian Nationals, which is a big deal.
We'll see. We'll see if I'm going to be able to make that trip out to Fredericton this summer. I got to see how things line up. Pushed hard. Lots of opportunities. Great. Some great memories this fall. Beautiful white tail.
I almost felt bad sending you that text on Wednesday when I got that whitetail.
Almost, but it still came through. I was talking
to Ashley because I sent Ashley a text. I sent him a text at 10 o'clock, said, I'm going for whitetail. He had shit going on. We were going to go Thursday. I said, screw it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out right now. There's good weather. I'm going to go out. And then I've already told the story about the camera, and I told Ashley a long time. And like, I actually felt bad when I was sending him a text that I got the whitetail and I didn't get it on camera.
Oh,
like I had it on camera. I had it set up. It was so money, and I've already told the story a couple episodes ago, so I'm not going to retell it. But man, I'm just like,
it was there.
It was there. It was so like, it was just like so perfect. It was like the perfect thing that never happened.
Yeah, that's I got some of that. Yeah, I got some of that for sure. It's it's like everything. It takes muscle memory and practice and repetition of your camera.
Well, and you have really to do those things once. It's like anything. You have to do it once to know to never do it again.
Sink it into your heart. Yeah, there's a couple.
And like now I'm going to push it. Like now I know you push it to activate it. But now I turned it off completely, so it'll just run till the battery's dead.
Yeah.
But now I know, like, hey, give it a couple seconds. Make sure that light's flashing and then proceed. Where it was like I seen the light flash once. And then I just went into my usual thing. What's the deer doing? Draw back, shoot.
Yeah.
And then I shot it. And like I said before, I was like, oh, yeah. And then I go to the camera and I'm like, there's no red light blinking. I'm like, fuck.
Stand back up, buck. Stand back up. Come on, be like,
don't be dead. Don't be dead yet.
That don't be too dead. Need a follow up.
Need a follow up shot. Unfortunately, that thing
puffing up like Pete's buck. It took three shots. You only took one.
Unfortunately, that Grim Reaper, it cut that thing open. Like the blood splatter from that thing, and I showed the video on Instagram. Was like, it was like the blood splatter was probably like 5 feet from where his feet were.
Yeah,
like just his first, like the arrow hit him, went through him, probably went another 30-40 yards, and you could tell where he like exhaled as he jumped, because there was just like this spray
right
of blood. And then after that, it looked like, you know, somebody was dragging a, you know, half a deer through there, and it was just like there was major blood. But that's the way she goes, I guess.
Learn from your mistakes and
yeah, it's funny because I've never had, and successes. I was a good buck too. I've never killed an animal and actually be disappointed.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I've never been like, I've had ground shrinkage where you walk up to, like, especially with bear, you're like, oh man, it looked bigger than it did, but you're not disappointed.
Right.
Yeah. But there I was actually legitimately disappointed where it's like, fuck.
Not in the bucket.
Can I get a mulligan on process. This one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Could I get a mulligan? Yeah, for sure. For the camera. It was, you know, I hated you having to get gut punched like that, but I just could relate so much that it's sort of like, because I don't really know other people filming hunts or trying it or whatever personally, I don't have conversations with them. It was a little refreshing that just to get hit with that nasty pain of everything going right except capturing it on film. You know what I mean? Like it's reminiscent of my mule deer from last year. You know, it's great deer, would have been a perfect filming opportunity, made a decision, compounded. I'm all of a sudden a kilometer and a half away from my camera gear and killing a buck. So yeah. I loved that I got that buck. That buck is just amazing, happy. But the whole way back, so I had to walk back this cliff complex to get to my gear. I was just sort of like sour. I was just sour at all the work to try and capture something on film, just to make a couple quick decisions and then not have it on film, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely a new experience for me.
Yeah.
But yeah,
are you going to try to capture anything like that next year, Kevin? Maybe Wyatt's.
Yeah. I'm going to play mess around with the camera a little more. Unfortunately, I feel though at like, I don't feel, I know what's going to happen. Like there's, like when I first switched over to just bow hunting, like when I was rifle hunting, I was really successful. I was doing pretty good, punching a lot of tags. And then I started bow hunting only. And then it went from like 6-7 tags a year to like 1 tag a year. And then slowly my evolution of bow hunting and knowledge through like the podcast and talking to other people and just perseverance, it's gotten back up to where it's like 5 or 6 tags a year. I know that once you add a camera into the mix, it's going to reset back to where it's like, you're going to miss opportunities. You might not get the quality animals you do, because I've noticed that substantially. Like I've shot way bigger animals aside from my elk. I've shot way bigger animals with a rifle than I have with a bow. Yeah. Way bigger, especially when it comes to mule deer.
What about more like setups where you're in a blind, where you're not?
Well, I feel like that. When you're in a blind or in a tree stand, it's a lot easier to do than what like Ashley's doing, where he's actually like,
oh, absolutely
capturing the hunt, filming it, where like he's trying to encapsulate every other thing that goes in a hunt. When you're blind, it's pretty easy. Like when I got into the blind, you just set the camera up and it's kind of like you just have it set up, and like I had it the perfect set. I checked the video footage and like I did a pre thing, scrolled it in, and I'll send it to you, Ashley. And it's like, it's just so money. There's a little hole in the, like a little pocket in the tent, and it's like zoomed right in. Would have been the perfect thing. This perfect video, but unfortunately, dummy, I pushed the button too many times. But yeah, like situations like that, I feel they're a lot easier because it's basically the camera set up. You know what would be great? If you had a remote, so you didn't have to reach over the camera, push the button. Like if it just had a remote control where you could sit there and like, because I had the camera where I wanted it to be showing, and then I flipped the screen around so I could see the screen, but the buttons and everything are on the other side. So I have to reach over top of it.
Should be a couple ways around that. If your camera's got Bluetooth, you can buy a third
party. Yeah, it does have Bluetooth. Yeah.
Okay. Then you can get a little Bluetooth remote. I'm pretty
sure. Yeah, and see, like that would have been perfect because then I could have just pushed it. And then, I mean, I might have done the same thing, but I mean, think moving forward, it would definitely be easier in a situation like that. Because like when you're in a blind, they still hear you, right? It's not a soundproof blind. They still hear you. They hear you, you know, if you're too loud picking up your bow, if your release isn't knocked on your D-loop already, if everything's not set up, which mine is set up, it's sitting on my toe and I'm holding it with my one hand, right? And if they do, like when they hear your cycle most of the time, I mean, if they're walking, if you can muffle out that sound with some sound they're making, you know, if they're chewing or if they're walking through the snow, you can kind of muffle it out. But in this situation, that deer heard my draw cycle, but it can't see me, so it's not overly frightened yet, right? Because there's a lot of sounds going on in the bush. Mm-hmm. And then it heard the of the arrow release, right? And then it tried to pounce, right? But the arrow hit it, went through it, blood. But I feel like filming in those situations is definitely a lot easier. I don't mind doing that. To do what, like to try to do a self-film bow hunt on an elk, I think would be extremely challenging.
Why?
Because it just happens so fast and you have to move so much, like, and it has to be set up on a tripod.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Like this year when I killed that elk, I was going through, got the cows to chirp, got the cows to make sound, followed the cows, got in tight to the sound. And it just so happens another herd bull, or not the herd bull, the satellite bull that was a 6x6, and the herd bull was a 5x5. The 6x6 cut me off. And he got hung up, and I had to run back a little ways, make another bugle, and then run back to where I was. Like, you wouldn't be able to capture it. And this all happens within like 30 seconds. you wouldn't have enough time for me to sit, put the tripod up, get it on me, do a bugle, run back. The bull would have already been where I was, and he would have been, I would have got busted. Like, there's no, it just happens too fast. I feel like if you're doing it by yourself, and especially in the dense area where I hunt, where like British Columbia is, for the most part, it's not these open fields where you could just like set it up, see the elk walking across this big opening, and then as soon as it hits tree line, you hit it.
That's
just not like that here.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Even if it just walks on the wrong side of the tree. Yeah, have your camera set up and it's like, no, it walked to the left instead of to the right. You have a beautiful everything to the left, but to the right, you don't, it's a total different camera set up.
And I feel like those kind of hunts would pretty much be impossible.
You need a cameraman. You absolutely need a cameraman to make that, you know, reliable. I mean, you could have the stars align one out of 10 elk where you could get it and self-film it. But that would, that needs a cameraman, particularly with the bow. And like you're saying, for the rifle setup, once you get a bull bugling, you're looking for that opening to draw them out on the other side. So you got camera set up and everything sort of set up, and you know, you got them coming to you. So you still need a few things to work out. And even rifle hunting, and because there's still a lot of, you know, you're charging after the bull, you're both bugling, you're both heading towards each other, you know, even with the rifle, it really begs to have a cameraman for sure.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of hunts that you just even like the high mountain stuff, if you're bow hunting, like goats, I feel like doing that by yourself would be extremely difficult.
Yeah,
like to get it good, I mean, you can get shitty footage. You could put a GoPro on, throw a GoPro on your head, you know, on your bow maybe, and get some footage of it that way. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same as like the third party perspective where the guy is actually, you're making it look like somebody's actually there with you watching what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not as interested in first party or first person perspective filming on hunts other than, you know, a shot of your boots, maybe. When you're hiking, it's just a personal choice. That doesn't get me as charged up. What did you say?
I said Pete's great at those.
Oh my god,
he's got the great. He's got like the most perfect boot and like gator pictures ever. I don't know how many takes you or how many times it takes you to get those, but you got that nailed down.
I just get lucky. I don't have the fucking patience. It's like, those will work. I can edit some stuff. If not, whatever. Let's go kill some shit. And then I don't kill shit. And it's like, I sure hope those photos.
Yeah. And see, that's the way I've been for the longest time. And it wasn't.
I can relate.
That's how I was the longest time. And it wasn't till like I actually just got forced into it by Ashley that I actually start to enjoy it. Like, I have to learn a lot about the camera, but like the automatic zoom and stuff in the AI definitely makes it easier than understanding, like then switching it to manual.
I really enjoy taking, you know, photos and stuff like that of some of our experiences that are out there. I find, and this is just me personally, it's nice on some trips where I decide not to pull out my phone for photos or anything like that and just enjoy the moment.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to start doing, is not using my phone and using the camera more. Even when, like, later today, we're going to go take a blind down, I'm taking my boys out and just using it there, right? Yeah. And using it, like, there's a lot of times, like, I was thinking later, I was like, man, I should have filmed when I took Wyatt out on, we were trying to get him a deer with his bow. And we're just going to get, like, it's doe season. He was going to shoot a doe. And, like, man, like, the last three days of us hunting were pretty, they're pretty entertaining, you know, like yeah. he learned a lot about, you know, like when we were walking out there in the last day, the very last day, you can hunt, December 20th, last day, we're walking out there in dark and he looks at me and he's like, dad, bow hunting's hard. I'm like, yeah, buddy, it is hard. It is really hard. But you know, he took a shot at one, it jumped the string. He took a shot at another one, it misjudged him. And right as it was getting dark, we had one coming in and it came right into 20 yards and it was broadside and it was perfect and it was just walking in the snow and he drew back and he was a little too loud on his drawback. You know, a little too loud. He's just not, like, we have his bow set up and it's 42 pounds. He's not, you know, he's 11 years old. Well, he's 12 now, but it, you know, he's just not quite there strong enough where he can just like pull a bow, like manhandle a bow and then get it into position where you need to get into anchor. Because a lot of times when you're hunting, you have to be able to pull your bow laying down in different positions. And it takes a lot of physical strength to pull it. Like my bow, the bow I'm shooting is like 78 pounds and I can pull it in any position, but I've also done it, you know, hundreds of thousands of times where you have that muscle built where he's just not quite there yet. He's physically not there. And if he would have, he could have put himself in a different position to be less loud and he would have been able to have it where that deer didn't hear him. Because basically it hurt him in his draw cycle and it just jumped. It didn't spook. It just jumped to the left and then stepped behind a tree. And if it would have just jumped and stopped, he would have been able to get a shot. But unfortunately, it jumped and moved behind a tree and just stopped. It wasn't spook and it sat there and it got dark. And that was it, right? But
and then it's next year.
Then it's next year. But yeah, I feel like I should have got that. I should have had the camera involved on that. The only thing is I didn't want to ruin the opportunity for him by fumbling with a camera.
Right.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I just didn't want him, like I wanted him to be successful. I didn't want to be like, wait, or like have a deer spook with me muffling around with the camera moving. I just wanted him to be successful all on his own where it was like, you know, if he's going to screw up, it's going to be him that does it. Has nothing to do with me. So that was my reasoning. I didn't do it.
Well, the other thing too, is at his age, you have to wonder if adding a camera into the equation too would add a little bit of extra pressure, even though it's just you and him still.
Yeah.
Kid's going to be thinking about that camera instead of thinking about the deer.
Yeah.
Potentially. I'm not saying you would, but you have to wonder that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But like I said, I didn't want to be the reason why it ruined. Like he's going to ruin a lot of, like all of us, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to blow our own hunts. And I just didn't want to be responsible for it. Like, right. Hey man, there's been lots of times where he's done it, but I didn't want to be responsible for him missing an opportunity. So I just chose not to do it, but I'm going to start doing like, even our 3D shoot, like to get that film for the whole week. And I think that would be really, really good to have.
Yeah. I think if we can plan some stuff ahead of time, then it'll make it a little easier.
Yeah. And I feel like it's going to take a little more, like rather than just like a grab and go, it'll take a little bit of planning ahead of time. Maybe me getting there a day earlier, you know, I'd like to film you guys setting up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Type of deal. And I know a guy I've been working with in town here, we've been talking back and forth, maybe we can get him along. And like, there is a lot of guys who are trying to get into filming and archery at the same time. So that would be a great experience or a great opportunity for them to learn and to be part of something like that. Because like those 3D, you know, it's great guys who want to bow hunt. That's the best practice, those 3D tournaments. I mean, obviously it didn't do you a lot of good this year, Pete, but
no, it didn't do me any good at all.
Not at all. You had a good year. Black bear.
No, I've got no regrets. I don't think that there were any hunts that I ruined an opportunity that I had by a bad decision. Like I've done it in the past where it's like, I shouldn't have done that or I shouldn't have done that. Every close encounter that I had, I think in those specific opportunities, I did everything right. The stars just didn't align. It just wouldn't come out of the bush.
And as you hunt more, you minimize those. Like I still did a lot of things wrong but I minimize and they're less severe. Whereas like if before it was like you're doing stuff like, and I've also changed my, like I've kind of niched my style of hunting into what works for me bow hunting. And like I said, I had to lower my standards for class of animals. Like I hunt a lot differently now with a bow than I did with a rifle, way different. But I've had to go through all those like those hard lessons and like completely blow a hunt to where like now if you make a little mistake, it's recoverable. Whereas like, yeah, I messed up there, but I can still get on this bull here right away. Yeah. Or I can still get on this mule deer, right? So you as you develop and as you become a better hunter, you learn you know, you still make mistakes, but they just, I feel like they're minimalistic compared to like those big ones that you made when you first started.
Being in probably some of the best shape that I've been in years also took out some of those factors that would adjust, you know, that fatigue. The longer that you can stay fresh in your head and body, the more often you're going to make correct decisions instead of making decisions under duress. You know, like you're so fatigued and like, why did I make that? I would never make that decision, you know, 3 hours ago. That was stupid. For sure.
Yeah.
So I think if a person just dedicates himself into, you know, just training as much as you can, it doesn't matter if it's the little things, it's going to help you out in the long run, especially deep into the season, because we all get more and more fatigued as the season.
Well, yeah, for sure. Like if you think of like physical, you get into like, if you're physically worn out, like how worn out were you at the end of the season, Ashley? You must've been just like,
I was done. Like
if you were in less physical shape, you probably mentally would have had to tap out a lot earlier.
Yeah, I would have been focusing on different things. It just would have been, you know, at no point did my body fail me this fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I told it to do everything. My body was never a factor in my hunt. If I wanted to make it to the next three basins, I made it to them every time. I think some of the adding in the mental training helped even more so. I think I'm pretty mentally strong, but torturing myself, like if you're doing something you don't want to do, or you've passed the time that you want to continue to carry something and you force yourself to carry it twice that distance, like, you know, you blow it way beyond where it says, oh, this kind of sucks. Oh, well, it's only 10% of the task and I'm over. No, it's 200% of what I could take. And then the hunting to the next basin, I didn't get to the point where I would be like glassing good ground and not seeing something. And then it's, you know, I've got 2 hours of legal hunting time left. There's one last basin to check over there. I didn't sell out on myself and say, no, I'm sticking this out. Well, it didn't work the night before when I was a kilometer and a half away. Now I'm 700 yards away looking over the same basin, not working, 2 hours left. I got a 30-minute hike to hunt for an hour and a half in a different basin. I'm going to take that even though that's in the opposite way of camp, it's the opposite way, it's headlamp on all the way back out of there. I just felt strong that way. So what wasn't me taking me out by not being ready. So I think,
Which is huge. And I mean, that could make or break it right there. Like,
oh yeah,
if you're in a position where you need to keep going, you need to keep grinding, you have to be mentally strong enough, mentally, physically. And I feel that obviously, you know, if you're physically worn out, your brain's going to be not far behind you, but you're right. You have to doing hard things is going to create good results, right? You do that day in, day out, where you just do challenging things, not necessarily physically, but just mentally challenging things. And just, it could be as simple as stepping out of your comfort zone, doing things you don't want to do. Those are going to build mental strength.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So, all right, guys, maybe we'll wrap this up. We'll say goodbye to 2023 and invite 2024. What's going to be the top story for 2024, Pete? Are Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce going to get married?
Who?
Yeah.
Isn't that the big story of 2023?
I don't know. My wife keeps bringing it up and I'm like, yeah, whatever. Do you know who those people are?
I don't know them.
Don't care.
Nationals. First place in the Nationals.
First place in the Nationals and first bow kill.
Nice. That should be good. Okay, guys. It's been a good year.
Yeah.
Looking forward to 2024.
Yeah. Happy New Year to you guys too.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year, everyone.